Welcome, everyone. It's the F-Ball NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hengst, AFC North lead writer at BleacherReport.com and Pro Football Focus fantasy football contributor. I'm joined this week, like every week, by my co-host, Brian.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
We are firmly in the month where training camps are going to begin.
Yes.
We're inching
ever closer.
Two and a half-ish weeks away.
Wow. Don't tease me.
Not long now. Less than a month away till preseason football. We're getting there.
We are. It's the home stretch, if you will.
And in the spirit of the home stretch, of course, we are going to be continuing our divisional breakdown for the 2014 NFL season. This week, it is the AFC South, and we're going to be joined by Sports Illustrated's Chris Burke. And he's going to be joining us. We're going to be breaking down the Jaguars, Titans, Texans.
And the Colts.
And the Colts.
Of course.
Of course, the Colts. So... look for that a little bit later in the program.
Very thorough review of all of these teams.
Yes. Before we get to that, you know, obviously we're in the depths of the off season in the sense that this is one of the very rare dead zones in terms of NFL news. It's between minicamp and training camps starting. Literally nothing is happening. There's no.
This is the time of year where the only NFL news is bad.
Is
NFL.
Bad news.
Bad
and
news.
On that.
I'm afraid.
Respect. I'm afraid. If you're a Browns fan, I've got some bad news. Or bad going to worse. In fact, Josh Gordon, prodigal son, as it were, of the Cleveland Browns, who's already, you know, got this indefinite suspension looming over his head for his failed drug test earlier in the spring.
And he's awaiting appeal for.
He's awaiting appeal for. He has an appeals hearing set for July 26th, but it might be kind of moot. Might not be even... There might not be a point to it because when you get the indefinite suspension, you can apply for reinstatement 12 months after the date that suspension is announced. Obviously, you know, if we're talking July 26th or later, then the earliest Josh Gordon come back next year is well into training camp. So they might abandon the appeal altogether, especially because over the 4th of July weekend, Josh Gordon was arrested for speeding and DWI.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, you really... if you're going to stick with the appeal, you really hope that you got a good feeling that you're going to get something out of it. Because every day you wait to get that 1 year suspension or indefinite suspension, like you said, where you need to wait a year to even get reinstated, every day you wait, the longer it puts that reinstatement out. And so I agree, like, it might be time to just cut bait, but...
Well, both his side, the NFLPA and the NFL, you know, wanted to reach a settlement before the appeals process, and now this most recent arrest might actually accelerate that process to happen. My colleague Mike Freeman is reporting that the league and Josh Gordon and the PA are trying to figure out a way to have the DWI arrest, which falls under the personal conduct policy as compared to the failed drug test, which falls under the substance abuse policy, and have those both wrapped up into one suspension that will likely be an indefinite suspension with the 1 year reinstatement clause, instead of having them be some concurrent thing where Gordon is suspended for the indefinite, has the 12-month suspension, and then has to deal with the consequences of the DWI, which, when you talk about these two concurrent events, does play out in Gordon's favor. There are a lot of people calling for the Browns to ditch Josh Gordon and to cut him, and I honestly just do not see the logic in that. I don't see the logic in it from a business or financial standpoint for the Browns. Obviously, if Gordon is suspended, they are off the hook for his cap hit, which I believe is, you know, it's not exorbitant. It's what, $1.4 million, I believe, for this year, $1.47 million. So it's about $1.47 million or something like that. They're not on the hook for a lot, but again, it's still some cap savings. But they don't, you know, they don't owe him that money regardless of whether he's on the roster or not, because he's going to be suspended. And I just think it sends the wrong message in terms of giving up on Josh Gordon. I don't think that the Browns want to give up on Josh Gordon. A healthy, sober, focused, Josh Gordon, whether he needs substance abuse counseling, whether he needs impulse control, counseling, something, whatever that he may need. If the Browns, cut him, they're basically saying, we don't believe that you can change.
Right.
And we don't want to wait and see what happens. And I think that, even the fact that when you get suspended in the NFL with the indefinite suspension, you can't really have contact with your coaches. You can't go to the team facilities. You are effectively, for the most part, cut off. But when you're released, you are completely cut off from the last, support system that you really have. Mm-hmm. If he can still say, well, I'm a suspended player for the Cleveland Browns, it's better than saying I'm a former NFL player who doesn't have a job.
Right.
there's at least some connection there. There's somebody caring about his future. And for somebody who already appears rudderless, going to that extreme with it, doesn't seem necessary, and it doesn't make financial sense. And what if he does rehab and then he comes back and he's fine, and then the Browns don't have him, and then all of a sudden the 49ers or the Patriots do,
right?
So
that's the last thing they want to happen, is to have him go somewhere and get his head on straight and turn into the player that he could be for somebody else.
Exactly. But the inherent message of not giving up on Josh Gordon by not cutting him, I think, is also a very important one.
True.
But he's obviously not doing himself any favors. He's known since at least late April that some very serious discipline was going to be coming down on him from the NFL. But yet, he got pulled over for speeding, and his passenger had marijuana on him, and it smelled like weed in the car. And then, just this past weekend, he gets the DUI and the speeding ticket charge again. And it makes it seem like, I'm getting suspended anyway. Who cares?
Right.
What I do. And so that's
troubling.
That's troubling, and
to say the least.
So obviously, I don't want to judge anybody's situation specifically, because I don't know Josh Gordon. I've never met Josh Gordon. So I can't tell you if he has a problem or what his problem is, it's not me to say, why don't you care about football more? Because football is inherently, it's just a game. It's a game where you can make a great amount of money in a short amount of time, relatively speaking, if you're good at it, which Josh Gordon is. I can't tell him you need to love football.
I think what most people say is, why are you doing this with this opportunity that you have?
Absolutely.
It's a question, but at the same time, it's hard to say why he acts the way he does. I mean, like you said, we're not him. We're not in his position. We didn't go through what he's gone through in
right.
his life.
I mean, and I've tweeted, if I was a dude with the football talent that Josh Gordon has, and considering my personal love of the game as a woman and a spectator and a member of the media, if I was a dude with that skill set who could do what he did, in the NFL last year and do that at a high level for years, I wouldn't do anything that would jeopardize it. But that's just me. I mean, maybe it doesn't mean as much to him,
Well,
I can't even begin to know what his motivations are.
It's easy to sit here from this vantage point of someone that won't ever play the game.
Right.
And I'm obviously in the same boat.
right.
To sit there and say, you got this great opportunity,
why would you screw it up?
What a bonehead. Why are you screwing it up? We're not him. We don't know what his motivations are or why he acts the way he does. Maybe it is just that he's not a good person and,
he's influenced by his friends.
All
he doesn't
do is
really
squander
care.
Things, and yeah, he has no self discipline. I don't know that that's true either. So it's I think it's really easy for people to take that position, but I think that's half a cop out to just sit there and say, oh, well, he just wants to. He's an idiot, and he wants to waste his opportunity.
Well, we all know people, multiple people. I would say all of us. Anybody who's listening, I think we all know multiple people who are like Josh Gordon in the sense of because of this or that, you know, their potential got derailed. Mm-hmm. But each and every case of that is different. You know, maybe we're projecting onto this guy, well, you should want this.
Right. Because I want it.
And I want you to want it. So I would want it. So why don't you want it?
Right.
You know what I mean? But we're not him. So we don't know.
It's on him. And that's the thing is
he's got decision making. He's got questionable decision making history. That's at least something we could probably
all we can do is sit around and hope he gets his head together and gets, you know, gets himself in a better position and makes use of the talents that he has
but he's
either going to do that or it's not. It's on him to do.
Right.
So,
it's be the person that you want to be, and who knows what kind of person he wants to be.
Right.
So we can't really even question it. The only thing that I can say is, you know, I'm sorry to the Browns organization. I'm sorry to Browns fans, but we're not going to be seeing Josh Gordon this season.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem likely after this most recent arrest. And, you know, and I remember, you know, we're going into the off season. I'm just like, please. Don't, of all things, don't let Johnny Manziel get arrested, because this is going to blow up my summer. And then, of course, then it's Josh Gordon, which is just another, just, come on, guys. And, of course, you know, the Johnny Manziel saga rolls on just like dollar bills in a bathroom. But that's all I'm going to, that's all the lip service I'm going to give to that, because who even cares?
Please, please.
We've got
other pressing issues.
We've got other pressing issues to discuss, like the AFC South.
Like actual football.
Like the AFC South.
That's going to be happening soon.
And so we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back with Chris Burke from Sports Illustrated, and we're going to give our 2014 AFC South divisional preview.
Absolutely.
Because that's football.
Of course.
That's not some guy who's suspended from football or some guy who plays football, but he's doing something on the weekends because who cares? No, football. Actual AFC South football. We're going to be talking about that right after the break here with Chris Burke from Sports Illustrated on the F-Ball NFL podcast.
Don't go anywhere.
Our 2014 divisional preview continues tonight here in the F-Ball NFL podcast. We're talking about the AFC South, and to help us in these efforts is Sports Illustrated's Chris Burke joining us again. How are you doing this evening, Chris?
Doing pretty well. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for coming on. It's you know, it's an exciting night.
It's always good to have you back.
What with LeBron's supposed decision looming, Twitter has been a fun night.
It's been looming for a little while. It feels like it's been looming for 3 weeks now. But
There was a lot of activity this evening, though.
Yeah, of course.
You know, a meeting with nothing to report on. But, you know, at least we have the NFL season starting up soon. We've got training camps coming up at the end of the month. Everything's starting to head towards another football season starting. So that's at least good news for those of us who have been waiting for this since, what, February 3rd.
Yeah, and especially since the draft and OTAs and everything wrapped up, that's probably why. I mean, LeBron obviously is going to get his attention, but you know, there's no NFL to talk about right now either. So that's why we have to talk about where Johnny Manziel is every weekend.
Exactly. And since it's not the weekend, I have no idea what he's up to.
What he's doing with his money this week.
Right. Exactly.
So with the AFC South. It's been a somewhat competitive division over the past couple of years. You know, you had the Texans kind of take over once Peyton Manning, you know, missed the season with his neck injury. The Colts, you know, fighting back into it with Andrew Luck. But other than that, you know, the Titans have been sort of middling. The Jaguars, of course, have been kind of disappointing. So, you know, it's interesting to see what's going to happen in the dynamic of this division this year. Starting with the Indianapolis Colts, who finished last year at 11-5. I mean, obviously, you know, maximizing what they have in Andrew Luck is the priority. Keeping him protected with the offensive line, giving him, you know, receivers and having a positive run game. You know, do you think that, you know, the continuing trend of keeping Andrew Luck better protected, that's going to continue this year, and he'll be able to take, you know, yet another step forward in his progress as a quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's the hope. And it's sort of interesting, you know, you mentioned wanting to build around him and sort of making sure that you have enough pieces around him and all those sorts of things. And I don't know that they do. I mean, I think that they certainly have talented pieces and some really interesting pieces, but, you know, you're going into this season sort of hoping to get a bounce back year from Akeem Nicks, hoping Reggie Wayne comes back 100%. You know, the offensive line is more or less the same offensive line that they had last year. And the run game is the same group, you know, Richardson, Ballard, Bradshaw. So you're kind of putting a lot on Andrew Luck's shoulders to sort of elevate right. the guys around him, which is fair. I mean, if you're going to call him, you know, that favorite term, the elite quarterback everyone likes to talk about, he should make everyone around him better. So,
or at least a franchise quarterback, you know.
Right. Yeah, that's right. That's probably a better term. And it, you know, it's hard to say where to exactly place the blame for what went wrong when things did go wrong for them last year. I mean, obviously the defense kind of bailed on them in the playoffs. They had that ridiculous comeback against the Chiefs to win their playoff game, but you know, they gave 44 that week, they gave 43 the next week. So for as much as the focus is on Luck and Luck only, I think there's obviously other issues that they needed to fix coming into this year.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's crazy thinking back to last year and all of those second half comebacks that basically Andrew Luck had to will his team into, because, you know, nothing was really happening defensively. And now you have Robert Mathis with a 4-game suspension to start the season. And, you know, I mean, that's not helping the offense or the defense if a guy like Mathis is sidelined for the first 4 weeks.
No, definitely not. I mean, the comebacks, well, first of all, Mathis, obviously, if he's out, you know, without him, he was their pass rush last year.
Yeah.
So, you know, you go into the year trying to find, you know, is Bjorn Werner going to make the next step? Can they count on anyone else to really get the job done? And if not, you know, they open with Denver on the road, and then they have Philadelphia in that stretch.
Yeah.
I mean, so it could be a tough start. The comebacks, the fourth quarter games, I mean, you look at those sorts of things, and this is sort of on my mind because I, as always this time of year, have been diving into my Phil Steele college football preview with its tons and tons of data. And, you know, one of the things he always talks about are the teams that had those close wins. It's such a hard thing to predict that you just sort of anticipate them sliding a little bit because it's such a hard thing to replicate.
Right.
You know, those fourth quarter comebacks and winning however many games it was by less than a touchdown, six, seven.
Yeah, it was an incredible amount.
So, I mean, and that's obviously speaks well of Luck and of, you know, just sort of the mindset of that team. And we know that it's a strong locker room. We saw them succeed with Chuck Pagano out in the past. So you know that there's the pieces there to have that sort of late game success, but to just expect them to do that again and to get to the fourth quarter this year and be down 14 and like, all right, Andrew, go ahead. You know, I don't know how sustainable that is.
You know, with the receiving game, you know, Reggie Wayne, you know, obviously he's an older receiver, but he's a smart veteran presence, very reliable. You know, where is he at right now with his recovery from his knee injury? And, you know, how's that? And of course, the Lavon Brazil suspension, how is that going to affect, you know, what has been such a pass focused offense?
Well, I mean, I think the good news on Wayne is that they seem to think he's going to be, you know, all systems go come training camp, which at this point, you know, other than getting back and sort of reassimilating himself to the offense, Reggie Wayne at 35 years old in his 100th NFL season doesn't need to be in, you know, he doesn't need a full camp, I don't think, to get up to speed. So as long as he's healthy by the regular season, it certainly sounds like he will be. And I mentioned Hakeem Nicks. That has the potential to be a really good combo when you consider that they also have T.Y. Hilton, who went over 1,000 yards last year, 80 catches. They have Colby Fleener. I mean, that's four really good receiving targets, and that's not even talking about they drafted Dante Moncrief in round three. Derek Rogers is back again, sort of a fine form. So, I mean, I don't think the Levon Brazil thing, for him, it's terrible because I'm not sure where he goes from here. I don't think – I'm not sure he would have made the roster in the first place. So, but from a personnel standpoint, I don't think that hurts them, especially with Wayne coming back. That's – with Wayne, Nicks, and Hilton, you're pretty much locked in on your top three guys.
Yeah, and I mean, I think I agree with you there that you know, probably on the receiving side of things, they're a little more set than on the other end of the offensive spectrum. I mean, Trent Richardson came in; he was hailed as I think it was a rolling ball of butcher knives, and he's kind of resembled more of a stationary sack of spoons or something.
That was nice.
And I mean, I think he's been kind of a fascinating character for me, just watching him throughout his career so far. I mean, I think a lot of people just call him a bust. I've seen a couple things out of him. It seems like he could turn a corner at some point. It's difficult.
Is it the correct corner? Is there like a gap there though?
And that's what I'm saying. Like it's he's had a weird situation as far as, you know, coming into the Browns and
third overall pick.
Being third overall, but then, you know, kind of, I think he was half injured his first year and then traded immediately and into a team that had issues, to say it lightly, on the offensive line. I can see Richardson supporters out there saying that, you know, his day is coming. And I'm curious what your thoughts are on that and their running game in general, including the O-line.
Man, you're right. He's such a hard guy to get a read on because he came out and it just seemed like he was going to be that next great running back, which is why he went as high as he did. And I mean, I think at this point, first of all, you start questioning how likely it is that a team's going to find that next great running back in the draft, because it doesn't seem to be happening with the consistency that you would expect, with the way that it used to. I mean, guys, they're finding people all over the place. And he also sort of had that Alabama stigma to him, which it's a great, obviously a great college football program, but we've seen time and again guys under Nick Saban at Alabama come out and already kind of be at a wall.
Especially at skill positions.
Right. So, I mean, I think there's obviously a chance for him to still do something in this league. And he's 22. This will be his third season. So, as you said, I think it's definitely fair to cut him a little slack to sort of jump ship in week three or whatever it was last year when that trade went down. Is not an easy thing to do for any player, let alone a guy that you immediately try to drop in as your number one running back. Like you said, behind a offensive line that wasn't all that great. So from that perspective, you kind of cut him some slack. I mean, at the same time, when you watch him, he just doesn't look like a guy that's about to bust loose. I mean, he's tentative, and I don't know.
His decision making is a great word. It's really strange because he looks so different in terms of decision making, especially and where he's running and what he's doing, than how he did in college. Like he's not confident in the professional level, you know, yet.
There's something when you look back at their stats from last year and you see Richardson at 3 yards a carry and then you see Donald Brown at over 5 yards a carry.
Yeah.
There's something odd going on there. And it's not just that Brown happened to find himself in spots that played better to his ability to find yardage. I mean, they were fairly even in carries. I mean, Richardson had more, but it wasn't like Donald Brown was picking up garbage yards or, you know, coming in on third and 20 and rushing for 15 yards. Yeah, like you said, I think he, whether it's a confidence thing or he just really was not nearly as good as we thought he was going to be, it's not all adding up so far. I mean, I think there is a chance for him to bounce back. You know, I still do like the possibilities that run game has.
Right.
You know, like I said, I think you still hope that Richardson kind of turns a corner. Ahmad Bradshaw's supposedly healthy enough to be back in the lineup this season, which, you know, that's a guy that I think really would have helped that team in a lot of ways last year. Mm-hmm. He only played 3 games, had the neck injury. I mean, he's a really good sort of do everything back. You know, he can block. He certainly would have helped with those protection issues more than I think Richardson did.
Absolutely.
Definitely, and probably more than Donald Brown did. So,
yeah.
You bring him back in and you sort of have that better balance of, you know, when you can pick and choose your spots with Richardson. And, I mean, for his sake, I hope he's better. It'd be more fun to watch him if he was better.
Yeah.
It's really frustrating. I mean, I don't know how you feel. It's really hard to watch him right now.
No, it's hard to watch him. You're just like, is he re- no.
Because he's still got a great
– no.
He's still got a great skill set. And, like, you know, you kind of – I don't know. At least me, I kind of root for the guy to, like, you know, get it going because he seems like he'd be
a
fun guy.
He's got the physical tools to do it.
Right,
you know?
If he got it all going at the same time,
yeah.
It seemed like it'd be a fun running back to watch.
Yeah.
But you know, who knows?
So now we're going to talk about the Tennessee Titans. Titans came in second in the division last year at 7-9, but it seems like everything is just trending downward, starting with the decision to take Taylor Lewan in the first round.
Yeah, she's been very critical of this Lewan pick for a minute, and you know, obviously, you know, I don't make any bones about the fact that I'm a Michigan fan. I come from that background, and I certainly have interest in watching these guys go to the pros and see how they do and whatnot. And I was hoping he would end up somewhere that I just wanted him to go somewhere other than Atlanta. And so at least he's in Tennessee there, but Andrew's been very critical based on the
they don't need him. They didn't need to take an offensive lineman that early in with their first round pick. You know, they lost Alteron Verner, who was an extremely effective corner for them, and that would have been a good spot for them to find a corner that could really replace Verner. And it just seems like they're somewhere between, you know, meh and very beige, and you know, and something, you know, there's a dark cloud forming. You know, you've got you know, Jake Locker's on his prove it year, and you know, he's got some receivers, but they're young receivers. He doesn't have a lot of, you know, proven production around him. All of a sudden, Dexter McCluster is listed as a running back with the Titans. No more Chris Johnson. And it all just seems like there's a lot of holes that they needed to fill, that they still need to fill, and it's just...
So you think they're just throwing stuff at the wall?
I get that impression. I get that impression. Like, there's a new Jets.
Oh, ouch.
Sorry, yikes. Titans fans. I'm sorry.
Well, Michigan, first of all, on the Lewan topic, Michigan, that's my – I mean, I still live in Ann Arbor. I left and came back after I went to school here. I haven't just stuck it out. I didn't townie it up. But I'm back. So those are – I also – like it when they land spots where I think they have a chance for success. However, I bought in fully to the Denard Robinson offensive weapon thing, and burned me.
Excited about it.
So
we'll be talking about that soon.
Oh yeah, we'll be discussing that.
The draft pick. I mean, the thing for me is where they got him.
Yeah.
You almost look at it as a decent value. Just if you strip it away everything else, for me it makes the Michael Orr pickup look substantially worse. I think that's the move to me, that doesn't make sense.
You don't want to pick up Michael Oher. You know what I mean? Like, the Ravens had the worst offensive line in the league last year, and like Michael Oher was a huge reason for that. You don't actively court the guy and be like, "Hey, you want to be a start?" Like, you don't do that unless you're really desperate.
It just sort of speaks, I think, to, as you say, they're just sort of throwing things at the wall, because mm-hmm. at some point in that whole process, you know, if you're going to go out and get Michael Oher in free agency, then you have to do that expecting to do something else in the draft. If you're looking ahead to the draft and seeing, first of all, a draft that was fairly deep, at least top heavy in tackles, you know, 3-4 guys that were up there, and you're thinking, okay, well, where we are, we can get a tackle. If one of these elite guys falls to us, let's snatch him. You know, it's sort of working against yourself to sign Oher, and then, you know, they're not
to being like, well, hey, if Taylor Lewan's there, let's take him.
Yeah. Right. It's one thing to make a luxury pick, and certainly we've seen that happen. It's very odd to see that happen at the tackle spot, and especially when there's no real option to move anyone to a guard spot, which is the other
thing.
You know, we see that from time to time, but they have Andy Levitre. They drafted Warmack last year.
Yep.
Oher is not going to play guard. I mean, there's only so many things they can do. So now you're wasting either your first round pick, or you're buying out Michael Roos, or you're just sitting Oher. So I don't know. Yeah, I agree. I don't know exactly what went on there. I'm not sure. It's hard to see what the plan is, even with the coaching change. And, you know, I think Ken Wisenhunt's probably going to be beneficial for Jake Locker, but you don't get the sense that they really have a plan in place at this point.
And it's another thing, too, for a team to take a luxury pick, you know, in the first round. But when you're 7-9 and you're kind of taking a luxury pick, that, you know, that just doesn't seem like that's good. You know, that's not a good idea, because, you know, you have, if you're 7-9 or 6-10 or something, you have glaring deficiencies and probably, you know, a decent pick in the first round where you can really get the best player available who's going to help your team right away. And it seems like a warped vision, really like a concern about the future of the offensive line when you don't really need to even worry about that right now. So that makes me really curious. You know, it's a curious decision. It makes me question, you know, a lot of the things we've seen out of the Titans. You know, obviously we've got Jake Locker in a prove-it year, but, you know.
You do sound very upset about this Taylor Lewan pick. That was accurate.
I'm
you
just
sound
confused.
Very yeah, I mean, it reminds me a little bit of the Eric Ebron pick in Detroit.
Yeah.
You know, it's a team that obviously had other areas where they needed to get better. It wasn't a playoff team. And you take a guy that probably was the best player at his position at that point in the draft, maybe was the best overall talent available. So if that's your strategy, if you're going best player available, all right. I mean, I guess to some extent I get it. But again, here you've just sort of boxed yourself into a corner, because you have somebody – who's not going to be able to play in that lineup. So,
I mean, just to defend the Ebron pick a little bit, as I'm wont to do, I guess. I can see that one a little bit more, just because, I mean, they had these other tight ends, but Ebron's different than the guys that they had in a way that I can really see Joe Lombardi exploiting, you know.
Sure.
And that, you know, I just see that as he's getting his Jimmy Graham, you know what I mean, in Detroit, now that he's in Detroit. So, that's, I don't know. That's the view of that one.
Well, complete with pass catcher on the Twitter bio instead of tight end,
right,
just
right.
in case.
Of course, just in case you're wondering. but this Lewan situation is just, had Detroit gone out and sign some other tight end in free agency, big name, or just some name or something like that, because they're trying to address that position, and then go ahead and get this guy in the draft, in their top pick, you know what I mean? Then I think there's a little bit more parallel there, but it's really taken that pick of Lewan right on the heels of the Oer signing that just is got to be the most baffling.
Like, why are you taking an offensive tackle for 2015 at the earliest, basically?
Or well, why did you sign Oer is the big question.
Why did you sign Oer is a huge question.
Well, the other thing is, and you mentioned Werner leaving, which I think everyone sort of expected them to go cornerback there. Understandably, but the other thing is they're also transitioning to a 3-4 defense. I mean, at least that's what they've said they're planning to do.
Makes sense.
And you know, maybe I think you probably would have been better off getting anyone who helps you fit that defense a little better.
Yeah,
they have some pieces for it, certainly, but. I mean,
Ryan
Aaron
Shazier.
Donald was
there.
Shazier was there.
Right.
Mosley was there. I mean, there were guys that you could have dropped in as a day one starter in a 3-4 defense.
To help that transition,
And, again, it's just a missed opportunity and with minimal improvement elsewhere.
So getting back to the quarterback position, we discussed a little bit about how Jake Locker, you know, he's got his last chance here. They bring in the quarterback whisperer in Wisenhunt, and you know, maybe that'll be the step for him. But then they also go and sign one of the more intriguing guys, I think, in at the quarterback position in the draft, in Mettenberger. You know, the guy had a lot of skills, but there was a lot of weirdness about him too. How do you see that working out?
Weirdness.
Weird. Yeah.
You know, the knee.
I mean, it's such – Locker's such a hard guy to really know if they're – it's kind of similar to the Trent Richardson discussion,
right,
to be honest. I mean,
well,
it's a top 10 pick. It's a guy that you expected to be a pretty good player in this league. And, you know, now we're going into year four and his third year basically as a starter. I mean, he's – been in and out of the lineup, whether it's because they just didn't want to play him. You know, he had the injury issues, so he hasn't had a full season. But this is his third year as a starter, fourth year on the team. And you're still waiting to see if there's really anything else there. And unlike with Richardson, who we at least saw some flashes from, it's been pretty minimal from Locker.
It's,
you know,
been halting, and then he got injured.
Yeah, right. They're just... There was the start last year. Yeah, he had that good game against the Jets right before he got hurt, and then, he was banged up the rest of the year. Didn't really play all that much. So, I mean, I think this is obviously an important year for him. I mean, I think Mettenberger is a guy right now that, especially coming off the knee injury, if you can get him up to speed and you can get him, even if you get him to the point where he can be a backup or a third string guy, I think this year would be pretty impressive progress for him, given what he's coming off of and the flaws in his game and making the jump to the NFL, all those things. So I don't get the feeling that they're going to throw him into the mix right away. You know, if it gets to the point where they're 1-6 and Locker's clearly headed out of town at the end of the year and all those things, then sure, give him, you know, may
give
as well.
Shot.
You may as well play him if he's healthy. But I think if they have any hope this season, it's got to be with Locker under center. And, again, I don't know exactly where the upside is there, how high to set the bar. And I think that's sort of fair for the entire team on offense, especially. You know, you look at the wide receivers are, you know, it's been – they kept waiting for Kenny Britt to come along, and now you don't have to worry about him anymore. But you know, who's going to be the second guy next to Kendall Wright? How much longer is Nate Washington going to be effective for?
Right.
I mean, there's questions, I think, at that position, questions at running back. I mean, so, it's just a team that's very much in flux right now. And so when you're a quarterback going into a season where you have to put up results, that's a pretty bad situation to be in, I think. No matter whether or not he succeeds or meshes well with Wisenhunt, rather, you know, if that's a good combination, maybe he improves as a quarterback and just shows some of those flashes. But I don't know really that it's realistic to think of him. You know, I don't necessarily right now look at this team as a playoff team.
No.
So if they're 6-10 and Lacker plays all right, you know, what do you do with them?
Right, and then you get back into that whole quarterback purgatory question. The with the run game there, what I'm really curious about is the Dexter McCluster acquisition. You know, currently on the roster, he's listed as running back. You know, maybe the Titans don't want to do the offensive weapon.
Offensive weapon, Dexter McCluster.
Right, but like when you look at when he's been the most effective, you know, he's a guy. You know, the 2 years that he played under Todd Haley in Kansas City, you know, he wasn't playing a ton of snaps, like 45 to about 55%. And, you know, but he had his role, and his role was as a hybrid kind of guy, you know, catching passes, running the ball, punt returns, kick returns. And then Todd Haley leaves, and all of a sudden McCluster is basically 100% a wide receiver. He's barely running the ball. He's not even doing many, you know, much return duty. So now all of a sudden in Tennessee, they have him listed as a running back. Are they really committed to, like, McCluster running back, or are they going to try to maximize the fact that he's so versatile?
I think they'd be smart to maximize his versatility. And, you know, he sort of falls in line with what we were just talking about. Even at his best in Kansas City,
he's a marginal player.
Right. you're not. Player. Yeah. So I think if you use him in that way, you know, let him return some kicks, use him as a fourth, fifth receiver, maybe throw him on the field in some run packages or even wildcat with him a few times. I mean, right. I think there are things you can do just to get him the ball and sort of get him into space and see if he can make some plays. I don't think he's a game changer for this offense by any means.
It's like a and game so, stretcher. He can stretch a little drive here and there.
Yeah, and I mean, he does do some things that no one else in that receiving core and really in the running game do.
Sure.
You know,
fast.
Right. Like, just run really fast. Yeah. Like, just take it and run. You know, Sean Green's certainly not going to do that.
No.
Bishop Sankey can. I mean, he's got decent speed. He's not necessarily what you'd call a burner. You know, he's not Chris Johnson part two. Good Chris Johnson, not recent Chris Johnson. I mean, I think he could help. Again, he's one of those guys that you have to really use in very specific ways, and you have to have plays specifically designed for him, because he's not going to go beat a lot of press coverage or, you know, get open on routes downfield or anything like that. You have to have he has to be your first option on a play. So you kind of hamstring yourself a little bit by having him on the field, because I think defenses know to pay extra attention to him. But I think he can help. Again, it sort of will go back to the play calling and what Wisenhunt sort of draws up there.
Moving on to the Jacksonville Jaguars, who remarkably at 4-12 last year were not at the bottom of the AFC South totem pole. this is a team I'm really excited about this year, to be honest. I mean, you know, you've got a little bit of a quarterback discussion, but all in all, I mean, I see this as a team that's really improving. It looks like a team that's fully behind Gus Bradley. I mean, he just seems like, you know, when a player talks about wanting to run through a brick wall for his head coach, Gus Bradley kind of evokes that kind of thing with the Jaguars players, and that can't be overstated in its importance. But let's start with the quarterback. So far, it's Chad Henne getting the start in week one. But I haven't seen anything that says that means Chad Henne will be starting in week 14, 15, 16, 17. Do you think that it's just kind of an ease in for Blake Bortles, and that eventually, even within this season, that Henne could give way to Bortles? Not even for playing poorly, but just because Bortles becomes ready.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd be surprised if Henne is still in the starting job before week 14, week 15. I mean, even by week 6, 7, I think you'll probably start to see some shift there. And maybe Henne comes out and plays really well and surprises people. I just don't know. I mean, I think at this point you know what you're getting in Chad Henne.
Yeah.
And he's sort of that solid veteran guy. He'll put up some decent stats. Right. He's a stopgap guy. And I think that's exactly how they plan to use him here. You know, he's going to start until Bortles is ready to start. And there's not – I think it's a smart approach. There's no reason to rush Bortles.
Right, true.
You know, they've sort of taken this – I think part of the reason that people have gotten – have been so effusive in their praise of Gus Bradley, other than, you know, the Seahawks connection and, like you said, the his players seem to be totally on board with this, is that this franchise seems to have a good idea finally of how to pull this rebuild off, and they're not trying to do it in one off season. You know, they're not going Raiders style and signing a thousand guys that have been decent in the league, but maybe aren't right. You know, it seems very planned out, very focused. So if Bortles is ready in week five, then you throw him in there and, you know, hopefully he excels. They have all those young receivers there, a young line. I mean, it's really, other than Henny and, maybe like Mercedes Lewis, it's a pretty young team offense. You know, it's one that's built to be pretty decent this year and then really good in like 2016. So I think they're smart to ease Bortles in, and I assume that they'll stay true to that word.
I'm the receiving core there is particularly exciting. You know, they had Cecil Shorts, they had Ace Sanders. You know, obviously the Justin Blackmon ship has sailed. He hasn't yet even applied for reinstatement, so who knows what happens there. But honestly, I think one of the biggest like coups in this entire draft was the fact that the Jaguars were able to get Marquise Lee and Allen Robinson. That's like, to me, that's insane.
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty stunned by that whole development. Not just because they happened to get them both, but that both of them
were still available.
We're there, right.
Yeah.
And that
especially
they aggressively
Robinson
went after him. You know, and I think if you want to nitpick, you sort of look and say, well, if you're using 2 second-round picks on a rebuilding team, do you want to use both of them at wide receiver? And there probably is some validity to that criticism. But at the same time, you now have, assuming Lee stays healthy, which I think is a question mark, you now have a pretty decent top four for the, as I said, this is sort of one of their building blocks now. You know, Shorts, Lee, Robinson. I mean, you can get all those guys on the field at the same time, and have some pretty reliable weapons. And the other thing is with, especially with Robinson and Lee, are guys that are sort of interchangeable. You can play them in the slot, you can move them outside. So you're not really boxed into using specific sets or using specific guys. So, yeah, I loved that move to get both those guys, and especially on top of taking Bortles. Again, it's a very focused rebuilding process, and I think that was what they went into this draft thinking, all right, well, let's get the quarterback, and then let's get the quarterback some help. And, I mean, it's hard to say they didn't do that.
So before we move on and round out this division here, there's obviously one important question to ask.
One tiny elephant in the room.
and I'm not going to ask this question just as a Michigan fan and not also because we have him on our dynasty team. I've read a couple things.
We already talked about Chad Henne.
I've read a couple things. It sounds like last year they bring in Denard. They hailed him as an offensive weapon. And they tried him. They just even tried to use him very little, it seemed like. And from what I'm reading, they've kind of abandoned that whole thing and just said, "You're just a running back now." And then in addition to that, he had this ulnar nerve injury, which basically nullified the use of his pinky and ring fingers.
So good job holding onto the football.
Obviously had ball security issues last year, and so people are trying to point to that as a reason. That's supposedly fully healthy now, and he's supposedly been turning heads over the last month or so in the OTAs and whatnot. Where do you think Denard's going to end up is
behind Toby Gerhart
in this offense. I mean, because he's completely different from
Toby Gerhart.
Get on
that Toby bandwagon? Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's tough because you say pretty much like 95% of the league, I think, turns heads in OTAs from what we hear from
the
reporters. So, you know, you take all that with a grain of salt. I wouldn't
everyone
be surprised.
But Greg Little.
Yeah, poor Greg Little. I wouldn't be surprised if he was more successful this year because I think he's better off as if he's not going to be a quarterback. You know, if they're not going to try him as sort of that option style quarterback, he should be a running back.
Absolutely.
I don't think he's a pass catcher. There's no evidence to suggest that he can be a pass catcher. And when he played running back at Michigan, it was after he had the injury, so he had the ball security problems to some extent, but he was pretty solid, and not just in the ways that, you know, he caught everyone's attention at quarterback, sort of making things up as he went along, but between the tackles and, you know, making some guys miss in tight quarters. I mean, I think he did a lot of things that you would want to see from a running back. I mean, I don't think he can stay healthy over a full season getting 15 to 20 touches a game, but if you use him eight times,
right?
Well, you got your bell cow and Gerhart, and then
right.
and then you sprinkle in
literal change of pace guy,
and you blow off your fireworks with Denard,
right? And maybe have him on third downs here and there. And...
yeah, I mean, I think they probably won't, but I know that. You know, you have Sanders, so you don't really need to, but kick return, too, is another spot. You can get him on the field again. I mean, I think he's got a chance. I certainly don't think Jordan Todman is anything to write home about as your number two back. I mean, Storm Johnson is a really solid running back. I was surprised he slipped to round 7.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's going to stick on that roster. So, you know, that's another guy he's got to get past to get touches.
Just a great, great name.
So good.
either for football or the Weather Channel.
They have a guy named Ace Sanders and a guy named Storm Johnson. Like they have the severe weather breaking news team basically.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm hopeful.
I don't know where to take that.
There's nowhere to take that.
And they could change his name. Maybe they can do that.
They could do that.
Hurricane Robinson. I mean, I think he's got a chance to be a guy that they get on the field a few times. I don't think he's going to play a major role. I drafted him in the SI mock draft last year, thinking he might might be sort of the sleeper.
We've got him on our dynasty
face,
team.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a guy worth keeping because we've seen what he can do when he has the ball. There just aren't that many guys that can make plays the way that he made plays when he was at his best at Michigan. And obviously it didn't translate last year. It may never translate to the NFL because of how he had to go about making those plays.
Right.
I don't think they will give up on him by any means.
He's an infectious personality and you know, he's such a great kid. You really got to root for that guy.
Denard football.
Yeah, exactly.
So finally, the Houston Texans. Texans won only two games last season. It was a real mighty have fallen kind of year. You just kind of watch this team kind of crumble from within. Injuries on defense, injuries on offense, no depth to back it up. Matt Schaub completely imploding. Do you think it was just a fluke kind of year, or is this indicative of kind of an infectious issue that the Texans are going to have to deal with this season, maybe a couple seasons to come, regardless of them, you know, having a new head coach and trying to take a new direction?
I think some of it was that sort of perfect storm coming in their face because you had pretty much everything go wrong. Schaub got hurt. I mean, Gary Kubiak collapsed in the middle of the game. It was just everything really that could have happened did. And it was after they started 2-0 is the other thing. It wasn't like, you know, they were 2-0 and then lost 14 in a row.
And they won their first game in November or something.
Right. They were 2-0, and they took Seattle to overtime, I think, in week 4 or 5. So it was a team that you thought was going to be there till the end, and then it just fell apart in a hurry. So I think you kind of write it off that way. I mean, the way I've approached them this offseason has been they remind me in a lot of ways of the Chiefs last offseason, where you look at their roster and you say, all right, there's just so much talent here. They have to get better. But the difference is the Chiefs brought in Alex Smith. Mm-hmm. They brought in Andy Reid, who you knew could win at this level. Bill O'Brien, I think, still has to prove himself as an NFL coach. You know, I don't know that it's fair to hold his feet to the fire in year one.
Right.
I think they could get as I said, the way I've approached it all the offseason is I think they can get a lot better if they get a quarterback. And that's really still what we're saying, I think. I mean, I don't think they have a quarterback. Ryan Fitzpatrick, I mean, technically they have a quarterback.
I mean,
he's a
Schaub
on the depth
stand-in.
They have a quarterback.
He's basically a stand-in for Schaub. I mean, he's a Schaub equivalent quarterback, but he didn't throw those pick sixes last year.
Right, and we talk about the draft and the Taylor Lewan pick being confusing. Mm-hmm. Waiting to round 4 and then taking Tom Savage.
Yeah,
I don't get that. And no. I didn't. I mean, I get it, that makes about as much sense to me as when we're talking about Tom Savage sneaking up into round 1 and round 2 and being
right.
Yeah.
First quarterbacks off the board. I mean, I just don't see him as a guy who anytime in the near future will be ready to start in the NFL. I mean, his offensive line was horrendous in college last year, but you know, he's like Joe Flacco, but without the good things that Joe Flacco does. So
he doesn't have the poise. He's not even keeled.
No. And he doesn't get through his reads, and he's really, really slow, methodical in the pocket. So it just, mm-hmm. I don't see him being ready to be an NFL starter. I mean, I don't think Case Keenum is much more than what we saw last year, which is a guy that can start for you 3 or 4 times, but you don't want to hang your hat on. And yeah, Fitzpatrick, I mean, we've seen Fitzpatrick. He'll probably throw for 4,000 yards if he plays all season, but he's also going to throw 25 interceptions. So,
yeah, he's destined to throw like 2 more interceptions than touchdowns.
Right, exactly. So you can understand why Andre Johnson got a little peeved this offseason.
Right.
I mean, I just don't see them. It's a really hard league to win. To win in, if you don't have at least a serviceable quarterback, and they have sort of a fringe serviceable quarterback.
Yeah, he's almost serviceable.
He approaches serviceable. He's you know almost Jason Campbell.
He's leaning serviceable, but
he's not quite across
the threshold.
He's not. It turns out that he's not even Chad
he's
Henny.
He's not Chad Henny.
No, he's a Henny minus.
Yeah,
he's a Henny minus.
Henny minus on the Henny scale, which was a scale I devised a few years ago.
but that's for another show.
Yes.
Yeah, so I mean, he's not Josh McCown. He's not going to Josh McCown us this year, I don't think, and step in and throw for and just dominate and, you know, light up the scoreboard.
Well, no, he doesn't play for the Bears.
Yeah, you got to have Trestman for that.
Right. So, I don't know. I mean, I think that they can – I think they'll win some games. Certainly they have – the receivers for him to be successful. I mean, I think Arian Foster could be in for a big bounce back year. Defensively, there's guys there, obviously, and Clowney and Watt, but it's really hard for me to get on board until they get a quarterback. And I don't think that they believe they have their quarterback. So
they just
should we believe they are in position?
Right, it's hard
challenge.
To be sold on them if they're not sold on themselves.
Right.
You know, we talk about Arian Foster, and, you know, obviously he can bounce back at any time. You know, we've seen him dominate the league in terms of being a great running back. But he's had a lot of injuries these past few years. And granted, you know, Ben Tate wasn't healthy last year. But now he's got Andre Brown to back him up. If Foster comes down with whatever injury, he's got a hamstring, whatever it is, can Andre Brown, you know, kind of step in the way that Ben Tate has in the past? And kind of bail that team's run game out.
Talent-wise, I think he can. I mean, again, he's a guy that sort of has his own injury stuff to deal with.
Yeah.
So,
oh yeah. So he's
I don't know how many carries you're going to get from him either, which is tough. You have two guys that have had injury issues in the past together. So, there's certainly the potential for that to go very wrong. I mean, I think together, if they stay healthy, and I keep using that line for some of these teams, but together, Foster, like you said, is a guy that we've seen have a lot of success in this league. Brown is someone that at least can get you, you know, short yardage and get you into the end zone, things like that. So the run game could be pretty good, and Bill O'Brien's a guy that's going to commit to the run game. They have a pretty decent offensive line. I think there's some hope there for sure.
It does make you nervous, though, when you have, you know, Foster and his injury history, even though he has that history of production. You have Andre Brown with his injury history. You've got a big question mark at what was happening at quarterback with Ryan Fitzpatrick. And it just, you know, it could go one way, but it could go the other.
Yeah, and that's why it's hard for me to really...
They're one of the harder ones to nail down,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. I just don't see them being a team that wins more than five or six games until they get the quarterback situation settled. And it's sort of like, and you talk about baseball teams always talk about having to be strong up the middle. You know, you want to be second base pitcher, second base, shortstop, center field. I mean, you want to be that up the middle type. You want to have all the strength up the middle. And it's the same for NFL teams, I think. Even you can load up at wide receiver and you can, you know, sort of load up on defense. But unless you have that quarterback, and even still, I think in this league, you need a running back that you can rely on and a steady front. I mean, I think they have the steady front in place. I think they maybe have the running back they need. Mm-hmm. They certainly don't have the quarterback. So you're at 1.5 of 3 stars there, and it just doesn't really compute to them. Competing, and especially in this division. I mean, if you just stack the teams up across the board, I mean, Andrew Luck obviously is leaps and bounds ahead of Ryan Fitzpatrick. Mm-hmm. You said Fitzpatrick's Henny minus, so you put him behind Chad Henne.
Right.
and probably behind Blake Bortles.
Yeah.
And maybe behind Jake Locker. So if you're going into a season as with the fourth best quarterback situation in a 4-team division, it makes it real, real difficult to be good in the NFL.
Yeah, I kind of feel like if you put Luck on this Houston team.
Oh, I bet it's a playoff team.
It's a playoff team, absolutely.
It's a contender for the AFC, I would even say, you know. It's like the stars are going to have to align, I think, for, like, Fitzpatrick's going to have to get his Fitzmagic back, and the running backs stay healthy. And I mean, I think.
And Andre Johnson gets happy because Ryan Fitzpatrick is like good. Ryan Fitzpatrick.
They got DeAndre Hopkins too, right on the other side, opposite of Johnson. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's weapons there, and there's a lot. It's like you said, there's a lot there. It's just a huge question mark at quarterback, and definitely some question marks at running back. And so I'm fully with you. I see them kind of in that, you know, 4 or 5 win-ish, but if
things could shake out and all of a sudden they have 9 wins.
Yeah, exactly. But
wins, who knows?
It's really hard to expect that.
I mean, they're kind of like that fantasy team. You load up on running backs, wide receivers, and then you wait to round 15 and you take Henny. Christian Ponder, and you hope that he throws for 25 touchdowns and
there's not that much difference between scoring and fantasy quarterbacks, right?
Yeah, it's exactly the same.
At least it looks like the Texans are they're gonna have a bounce back on defense. Obviously, you know, Brian Cushing is also a perpetual question at this point. But you've got J.J. Watt, you've got Jadeveon Clowney, you've got Lewis Nix, you've got Jonathan Joseph, who's, you know, an underrated cornerback. At least that side of the ball seems to be back to being more menacing, whereas it lost, you know, because of injuries, especially lost a lot of its bite last year.
Yeah, Cushing, I think, is a guy that he's really one of the better linebackers in the league when he's at his best.
Yeah, and it's when he's healthy,
and it hasn't been that often. And right, it's not, you know, it's you just sort of have to wonder how many times you can have a devastating knee injury and still be an aggressive linebacker.
Explosive, yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know. He might be getting close to the limit. So, but yeah, Clowney, Watt is, I mean, off the edge, you should be as good as pretty much any team, maybe this side of St. Louis. And even then, I think you're probably in the mix. And Nix was a really good draft pick. I like that one a lot. I think, especially with the types of fronts that they use, you know, he's a big guy, but he can play different roles up front. So he should help. Yeah, I mean, the secondary is not, I don't think, as bad as people think it is.
Right.
With Joseph and, you know, you got Swearinger at safety and now Kendrick Lewis, Kareem Jackson. I mean, they've got capable players back there. The problem they had last year, really, they couldn't stop the run very effectively. Mm-hmm. And they also didn't force any turnovers, which is just absolute killer. And especially when you have the issues they had on offense. If you can't, they had 7 interceptions last season. I mean, that's
it's terrible.
Pathetic. So
it's terrible.
It's one thing to give up passing yards, but if you're not turning the ball over, even the best quarterbacks are going to have a tough time going, you know, 70, 80 yards every drive to get points, let alone the hobbled Matt Schaubs and the Case Keenums of the world. So they have to be, they have to come up with some more big plays this year. You know, you would think that they'd be able to with what they have up front, but until they do that, I think the strides forward will be kind of minimal. But I'm with you. I think they will be better defensively, and obviously having a better offense would help. I mean, it sort of goes cuts both ways.
Sure.
Well, I think that.
That was thorough.
That was a thorough look at the AFC South for 2014.
Are there any other Michigan guys in this division? We might be able to hit on a few more Wolverines before we get out of here.
Mike Martin? I don't know.
All right, never mind. Let's wrap it up.
So before we let you go, Chris, let our listeners know where around the internets they can find your work and your tweets and all of that fun stuff.
We can get me on Twitter at ChrisBurke_SI. And then we have our SI website is recently retooled and fancified. So you can get on there. Especially once teams get back into training camp here. Should have plenty of good stuff up there.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're getting closer. Edging ever closer. I always have people ask me, oh, but what do you do in the off season? I'm like, well,
sit around and wait for the season.
There's very little off season. There's like this little gulf between like mini camps and training camp, and that's like aside. Well, not for me because I cover Johnny Manziel and Josh Gordon. So
there you go.
But for the most part, this is about as off season as it can get.
Yeah, there's a little 2 week. Kind of gap here where you sort of breathe and try to catch up on sleep and things like that and try to track where LeBron might sign and then get back into it. So,
well, apparently, according to
did we miss it? Did we miss LeBron signing?
No, there's a bunch of if-thens. Okay. Like, if LeBron doesn't come back, Chris Bosh is going to go somewhere else. And yeah, there's a lot of there's now if-then statements regarding LeBron's future.
All free agency is on hold waiting for LeBron, so we'll let him drag it out a little more. You kind of almost wish they had he did a show again, so we'll at least know when the announcement's going to happen. You know?
He's going to play receiver for the Browns because he want to catch passes from his good friend Johnny Manziel, and they need somebody and so on.
He plays football. It's tight end and defensive end. He'd be both ways, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Yeah, he'd be a legend. That's how that works. Well, thanks so much for joining us this week, Chris.
Yeah,
we really
stuff.
Appreciate it. Thanks for helping us iron out what we should be expecting, what's going into the season for the AFC South.
Yeah, thanks for having me again. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, we'd love to have you back on in the season maybe sometime.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I am here. So
excellent. Good to know. We'll make a note of that.
Outstanding.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, Chris, and have a wonderful day.
All right. You too.
Take it easy.
Here at the F-Ball NFL podcast. Big thank you again to Chris Burke from Sports Illustrated for joining us and previewing the AFC South for this season.
Outstanding stuff.
Outstanding stuff. That's a division that I definitely plan to keep my eye on this season.
There's a lot of intrigue there.
There's a lot of intrigue, absolutely. And I really feel like this is going to be the real corner turn for the Jacksonville Jaguars in particular.
It'd be fun to watch.
So, before we go, of course, we're going to be reading from the Book of Bradshaw, the memoir by Terry Bradshaw, It's Only a Game. This is our last reading, because we've basically covered every important
milestone
in this book. So,
not too many podcasts will read you a whole book.
No. But we're going to come back next week. We're going to find something else to entertain you with before we sign off, because it just seems unnatural to be like, oh, thanks, guest. Here's who we are. Goodbye. It's always nice to have
some keep you entertained.
So here's Terry Bradshaw talking about some of his television acting experiences to close out our reading of his memoir. On Married with Children, they were going to name the high school football field after me rather than the loser main character Al Bundy. That surprised me because, as I told Al's not-so-bright daughter Kelly Bundy, I only went there 2 months and never put on a football uniform, which caused her to wonder, you mean you played naked? I appeared in a lot of episodes of TV series. Sinbad, Hardcastle and McCormick, two episodes of Burt Reynolds' hit show Evening Shade, the Jeff Foxworthy show, Everybody Loves Raymond, and if I didn't play myself, I played someone who could have been mistaken for myself, except for my role in The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr., in which I played a villainous cavalry officer, Colonel Forrest March, trying to kill bounty hunter Briscoe County and assassinate the President of the United States. In the acting business, that is known as playing against type. I had never played the bad guy before. Trust me. Friends, quarterbacks are never the bad guy, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. This was definitely the hardest part I ever played because I really had to act. In the show, I hired 3 men from my posse to track down that maverick Briscoe County, former linebacker Carl Banks, former quarterback Jim Harbaugh, and Ken Norton Jr. Reviewing my performance, the great Chicago Sun-Times wrote, quote, Bradshaw proves he's a better actor than Jim Harbaugh. So, y'all, to close out our readings from It's Only a Game, the memoirs of Terry Bradshaw, just if anything you've recalled from these many, many, many episodes of this podcast where you've read from this book, just remember, Terry Bradshaw is a better actor than Jim Harbaugh, according at least to the Chicago media empire.
Good stuff.
And with that,
we've learned lots of lessons and interesting quips.
Yes.
Over the excerpts that we've read.
Yeah, we're going to have to move on to something else. Maybe Bill Belichick's dad's book about football scouting.
We'll cook up something.
We'll dry this place up like a sponge.
With that
does it for this week's episode of the F-Ball NFL podcast. Again, big thanks to Chris Burke from Sports Illustrated for joining us to preview the AFC South this week. We'll be back with another special guest next week to talk about the NFC South. That's right. You see, get a pattern, AFC North, NFC North.
North, South, and then we go
East, West. Yeah, that's how that's going to work. So we'll be back next week to talk about the NFC South. Until then, of course, I am the host here at the F-Ball NFL podcast. I'm Andrea Hengst. I'm the AFC North lead writer at BleacherReport.com. You can find me on the TeamStream app. You can just search me on the Googles. On the TeamStream app, you can also add me as one of the authors, the columnists that you follow, so you can never miss a column. You can also find me writing about fantasy football at ProFootballFocus.com. And on the Twitter at FBall_Andrea, FBALL_Andrea.
And I'm Andrea's faithful sidekick.
Oh, yes.
And producer of this podcast. And I can be found on Twitter at BFAT65. That's at BFAT65.
He's my faithful sidekick. He doesn't sidekick on any other podcast. It's not going to get...
Not anymore.
Podcast transmitted diseases or whatever.
Okay.
So again, you know, thanks of course for all of you for listening. Thanks to Chris Burke from Sports Illustrated for being our guest this week, and we'll be back next week previewing yet another division in this glorious National Football League, which is soon to open another wonderful season. We're getting so close.
So close.
Until then, stay tuned here at the F-Ball Podcast. We appreciate all of our listeners.
Always.
And we'll see you next week.
Later.
Peace.